You're listening to Mix Comic Podcast.
Your host, Mick.
Welcome to the podcast. This is episode 4, and I'm Mick. Today is December 14th, 2014, and I'll be covering, of course, the main Superman books that I read at least once a month. And right now, we're covering Superman 35, which is part of the Men of Tomorrow storyline. I believe this one's called The Quick Fix. And if I sound a little different, I've got a brand new microphone. Got an Audio Technica, I think it's 2020 something, it's a USB mic. And I'm really excited to use it. This is my 65th release podcast. Most of my podcasts, of course, have been released over on the Weird Life Fancast. And so I'm just really looking forward to seeing how this thing works. I'll be doing some changes, some configuration changes here and there to see about how to best place this where it's not in my way, but also I can try to make it sound better. I don't know. You guys, if anybody out there messes around with this stuff right now, I've got like a pop filter, shock mount, this microphone in there, and kind of like a boom scissor stand attached to a table that's next to me. That's kind of coming out in front of me. So if anybody has any tips or anything on how best to set this up or hears something going on with this show that I could improve on, definitely let me know. All right. I'm going to have a friend for the next show, my buddy Redbeard, who I've talked about. He's caught up and made some notes, and we'll be reading number 36 here for the next show and recording probably as we get closer to Christmas, which, Merry Christmas to you guys, Happy Holidays, whatever you're celebrating. I'm looking forward to a little bit of family time myself, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And as a little more about Redbeard, I'll talk about it with him, but he'll be covering some of the DC Essential graphic novels with me, and so we're really excited about that. No corrections have been sent in for me yet, so luckily I'm not screwing things up too much, and don't have any iTunes reviews, so let's go ahead and get right into the synopsis. Here we go. Superman number 35, The Men of Tomorrow, Chapter 4, The Quick Fix. Written by Jeff Johns. John Romita Jr. is the penciler. Claus Jansen inked this issue. Laura Martin is a colorist. Travis Lanham, lettering. Romita, Jansen, and Martin did the cover. Eddie Braganza is the group editor. Variant covers by Mike McCone and Romita Jr. Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster by special arrangement with the Siegel family. And I pulled this synopsis from dc.wikia.com. At the Daily Planet, Steve Lombard and Ron Troop are arguing about the role of superhumans in saving the world from aliens and robots when Perry White shoves past with Lois Lane following behind, complaining that he assigned the Ulysses story to the whole staff instead of just her, especially after Clark Kent scooped her on the interview. Perry reminds that as one of the everyone he assigned it to, she is still welcome to work on it, adding that he believes Clark will be back in the bullpen by the end of the week, and ordering the man currently in Clark's old desk to vacate it by week's end. Smirking, Lois comments that the planet is finally getting interesting again. Superman and the Ulysses, meanwhile, are concerned about the villain called the Machinist, who used an innocent man to provoke Ulysses into committing murder. Superman points out that he was already dead. The Machinist had taken control of Neil's voluntary functions, and similarly, the victim here had been affected by a similar device that had long since killed its host. Even so, Superman warns him to never use his powers like that against someone. Killing is unacceptable. In the meantime, he suggests that they use the transmitter that the Machinist was using to communicate with them to track down the by following the energy trails that Ulysses can see. On a freighter in the North Atlantic, the Machinist waits for his customer to arrive with payment, despite a mounting storm. Unexpectedly, the ship slowly rises out of the water as Superman and Ulysses lift it up on their backs. Realizing he's been found, the machinist rushes on into the hold and calls on his giant robotic crows to fly out and attack them. Once they dispose of the creation, Superman grabs the machinist and uses his X-ray vision to look through the metal mask to see the truth. Superman demands to know who all the machinist buyers are, but the crook refuses. Ulysses attempts to force the information out of him using his ability to trace energy. Unfortunately, he is not expecting just how many weapons that the machinist has sold, unaware of just how pervasive violence is on Earth. Superman reminds that their role is not to destroy all weapons, but to stop the madmen who sell them and to lead by example. The people cannot be forced to follow. Ulysses is not convinced, and wonders if his parents were right to send him away from Earth. Frustrated, he flies off, leaving Superman to be caught in an explosion as the machinist self-destructs. Superman senses that this was not the real man either. Superman calls Neil's parents, hoping that they might have seen him, and assures them not to worry when they admit that they haven't. Soon after he hangs up, the Quins receive a knock at the door from Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen. They close the door in their faces. Clark, meanwhile, heads to the planet to talk to Perry, but he and everyone else are interrupted when Ulysses' face appears on every TV screen in the country. He reveals his name and place of birth, explaining how his parents were once creators of weapons of war until they turned their back on it to search for a better world, to which he was sent during a tragic accident. He explains how he was brought up in the fourth dimension, but upon returning to Earth, he learned that there are too many people on the planet who are hungry for power and filled with hate. So he offers the chance for 6 million humans to join him in the fourth dimension. All right, into the coverage. Let's see. Thoughts on the cover. We've got the machinist who's holding Clark's head right about his chest level, and he's got his hands and fingers all over his face, which fingers look weird. But he's holding his head, and his beams look like they're going out of control. And this isn't anything that happens in the comic, but it's just kind of a reminder his powers are out of control. Kind of makes it look like the machinist is having something to do with it, when really I think it's Ulysses that's giving him a problem with his powers, unintentionally at least, we think. But it's a pretty good cover. I like it. It gets the job done. It's cool to see his powers going crazy on him. Now there's another variant of Superman and Ulysses flying up into a starry sky with their backs to each other. Not that they're supposed to be supposing any conflict there, but maybe there is. They're kind of flying over a desert, broken world. I don't know if that's supposed to be the Great World or what, but it doesn't look like Earth. There's another one that's really crazy. Apparently they were doing Monsters of the Month variant covers, and it's just weird. I mean, Lovecraftian creature that's all black and has crazy, definitely has crazy fingers, more so than usual, and spiky arms and chains coming off his belt. And he's got some energy beams going all out of his head, which is kind of calls back to what the original cover looks like. I like it as far as if you have to have a weird monster of the month. That's kind of cool looking. Maybe this is the thing that's hidden behind those doors, but it's got an S shield, so I don't know. And there's one more that's supposed to be somebody's cell phone. And I guess it's supposed to be Jimmy's cell phone, because Lois Lane is texting him, Jimmy, Superman is fighting the Teen Titans, which maybe that's from the different title that I'm not reading, but that's pretty good. It's okay. So we start off at the Daily Planet, and the planet building here takes up one side of the page, and it is awesome looking. It's like a modern looking skyscraper with the Daily Planet globe on top. And I was going to say that I thought this was kind of stretching my suspension of disbelief. So just because I didn't think newspapers made enough money to have real nice big buildings anymore. But I looked up the New York Times building, which I guess could be comparable to the Daily Planet. And I was floored when I saw that it is a skyscraper. I mean, it's 52 floors. It's respectable size. But it's pretty large. I mean, nowhere near as large as the Daily Planet building looks here. But still, that's crazy. I couldn't believe that. Chicago Tribune, looked that one up. It's also a large building, but it looks pretty old. Not new and modern like this one, or the New York Times building, which is pretty new. I think it was in the last 10 years. And we've got Lombard and Troop talking here. And as much as I can't stand Lombard, I'm kind of agreeing with both of them here. Though Troop has a good point. They're kind of arguing Superman, you know, Superman got rid of this stuff, and that's great. He saved us. And Troop's like, well, you know, maybe we need to know what some of this stuff was, and he can't always rely on Superman to solve our problems. And I'm just now realizing how well this sets up this issue as I was taking these notes. I don't know if you can hear my kids outside playing with some neighbor kids. So you may hear them yelling and all that, but hopefully that won't bother you too much. But a simplified Lombard thinks we can sit around and wait for Superman to fix things. And like I discovered that, but this sets up the issue very well. Because you've got one guy saying, we can sit around and we're going to wait for Superman to fix things. And Troop saying, can't rely on him to solve our problems. So it's just two different sides of the human coin, which we'll get to later. And I think we can all agree with Lois here, who says at the end of the next scene with her and Perry talking, Daily Planet is finally getting interesting again. It's also good to see that Lois and Jimmy are going to team up. Also, when did Lois start working under Perry again? The New 52 starts out with the Georgia Lopez run, and she's running the TV side of things. And I've read most, if not all, of Action Comics and Superman, so I'm kind of confused on where I missed something. Kind of love the picture of the guy that's sitting in Clark's old desk. Perry's telling him, you need to find another desk. That one's about to be reoccupied, and he's just eating a sandwich like, oh, what? Okay. On the next scene, we've got... it's where Ulysses just killed the guy at the end of the last show and comic. And the police are looking into the matter, and Ulysses is... He's bothered that he killed a man when Superman lets him know he would have if he wasn't already dead. I'll just talk about this a little bit more. Superman tells him he's got to find another way. It's important that he knows that. You can't try to kill these people just because they're doing bad stuff, I guess. When Ulysses is going to follow the energy trails from the transmitter and hopefully find the machinist. And I want to point out where I like the art. I've been talking about places I didn't like it as much, but yeah, let me say the shot where Ulysses is looking into the energy of this transmitter, it's pretty cool. His eyes are lighting up and he's accessing the energy from it, I guess. But I enjoy it. And the faces here, they're hit and miss, but in some places it's really good, other places not so much. But yeah, the art, I'm digging it here. It's very nice. So we're switching places to the North Atlantic, the machinist's place. And before this fight's about to kick off, the machinist releases a bird. And I'm kind of wondering how this is going to pay off. And then we get to what is probably the highlight of the comic for me as far as the art goes. And a highlight of this run, really. It's the two-page splash of them lifting the boat up. And it's just, it's amazing looking for some art. We don't need to talk about how realistic it is, him lifting this big barge, whatever this thing is, out of the water from just two points of human size, but, oh man, it looks really cool. And the same again when they burn a hole in the side of the ship. This is a hole where the bulkhead's glowing red at the bottom and blue at the top. And they step through it, so that looks amazing. Just before that, when the Robo-Crows are released on them, that the machinist has, some of their red and blue heat energy blasts, Superman, that is, and Ulysses' red and blue heat energy blasts look really cool. So the art is on point here for me. And whenever Superman gets the machinist, he's using his X-ray vision, and he's looking, trying to look through the mask. And it's a little confusing, but apparently the machinist is two, he says, brilliant people sewn into one. But this wasn't his doing. So was this the work of the unknown enemy that we don't know yet? And that's at this point that Ulysses takes over this interrogation to focus his energy tracking power to kind of map out the trails of everyone who's come into contact with him. And the visual here, once he does this, it looks like there's 1,000 different guns and weapons of all kinds attacking Ulysses from all directions. Tanks, missiles, machine guns, handguns, planes, bazookas, grenades. And he's reached beyond the machinist's creations and he's all of a sudden seeing all the weapons on the planet, which brings us to the conflict and to the change in where I believe things are going with this story. And that's a conflict between Ulysses and Superman, where Ulysses is saying that the Earth, they've yet to conquer things like disease or famine or natural disaster, which are common enemies of man, and rather they seem obsessed with weapons. And Ulysses wants to find and he wants to destroy all Earth's weapons. When Superman tries to explain that you have to lead by example, you can't force these people to do what they want. Want to know what he talks about? Maybe his parents were right about wanting to leave the planet? And then the machinist gets up after Ulysses leaves, because he's just fed up, I guess. And machinist tells Superman he's right about how the world would never stop wanting weapons. And he says, Mr. Oz said so. And I guess that's going to be the mysterious man's name. It kind of makes sense. He's the one behind the curtain right now. We don't know who he is. It's strange. Don't know where he comes from. When at this point the machinist explodes, only leaving behind a shattered piece of his mask. And maybe he knows he's being tracked. And it's earlier on when he releases that crow, and he's sending a copy of his consciousness away. That's the only thing I can think of. By the way, definitely send me an email at mickginger0@gmail.com. Let me know how this mic sounds. Let me know how you like the show so far. Sorry to interrupt right here, but just kind of thinking about it while I'm getting a drink of water. I'm digging it. I don't know why. I'm so excited that I can do things like, you know, like, whoa, like with my headset, it's always right there. I can't like get closer or further away or get closer in or something like that. I don't know. I'm just playing with it. Maybe I'll cut this part out. I'm dumb. Oh, while they're talking here, they got the water dripping off their faces, which I thought was really cool, that effect. All right, so Ulysses leaves, you know, and he's checking out military bases. I guess some war-torn places, memorials to World War II and Vietnam. And I don't know if maybe you've been to D.C. and seen the World War II Memorial or the Vietnam Memorial, but it's really neat to go see a lot of that stuff if you're in the area. It kind of lets you have a chance to take pause and think about those things that have happened in the past. Meanwhile, Clark is talking with the Quinns on the phone as Superman, but he is at the Daily Planet on his cell phone. So I guess the NSA knows that Clark Kent is Superman, unless this is some kind of burner phone, which they probably tracked that too. But in the same scene, we see Lois and Jimmy. They figured out about Ulysses being Neil Quinn, and I wonder if they'll tell us how. I doubt it, but it really doesn't matter that much anyways, except that she's just an amazing reporter, and they're supposed to know that. So Clark at the planet, he's there. He needs to talk to somebody to get some more info for his Ulysses story, when Ulysses breaks over the airwaves and gets on the computer monitors and the cell phones, very Zod-like from Man of Steel. And Perry is upset that Clark has been scooped by the story itself. He's like, you're sitting on this? Wow, you could have been telling, you know, you could have hooked me up. And during this thing, he's offering a chance for 6 million people to come with him to the great world. When he, like, it shows him rip open a hole, I guess, in our dimension. Which is crazy, but that's kind of cool. We got this guy that can tear a hole to a different dimension. That's neat. Offers to bring 6 million people to. Why 6 million people? I have no idea. But I really want to know what Superman's going to do. This is a strange situation. And it's not like Ulysses at this point is threatening to hurt anyone. I wasn't expecting him to become the villain like this. I have the other comic that follows this one sitting in combo pack plastic. I'm looking at it right now. It's been sitting there staring at me for a couple of weeks, and the cover's really grown on me. I'll talk about it the next time, but I cannot wait to read it. At first, when I saw the cover for the new one, I kind of was like, eh. And now, the more I look at it, the more I really enjoy it. But so Superman's going to be in a strange place. Like, what does he do? Does he stop? Like, if these 6 million people, if he can find 6 million people that want to come with him, would Superman force people not to go? What does he do? What happens here that makes Superman take charge of the situation? Like, I don't know what he's going to do. What's the right or wrong thing to do? Because the great world sounds like a really good place. maybe the problem is everybody wants to go and he can't find only 6 million. It's going to be more than that. So what's going to happen next is very intriguing. Well, but, you know, a lot of people might write that the humans would get there and screw things up. I don't know. It seems like that's how a lot of fiction goes. But, so I'm a fan of the situation this creates for Superman. I honestly can't think of another story like it. And next, The Great World. So let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good. We got the ship raising, which was amazing, the art there. Superman's face looks really good on some panels. Other panels, not perfectly great, but, you know, pretty good. He's getting better, I think. The scene where they're dripping with water was different. I like that. You know, not something you really would think much about. But they're kind of just covered in water and how that looks. And a two-page splash looked neat with the Great World. I don't have any context. I don't know if these are... It looks kind of like a weird skyline, possibly. But it also looks like maybe some kind of space arc. I don't know. The bad... Ulysses looks off here, especially. He's leaned back, showing the Great World to everybody. And I don't know if he's supposed to look evil or crazy. Maybe it's a style choice. But it's okay. And ugly, once again, I don't have anything really ugly to say about this book. I think it either is all good, great, or not so great. But there's nothing really ugly here. It all looks pretty good to me. Even the places where it's off, I can forgive it, because, I mean, so many panels. The guy's got to draw so much a month. Unanswered new questions this issue. Again, who is this mysterious watcher in green, and who is Mr. Oz? Is it the same person? How did Lois find Neil's family? Where is the machinist? I think maybe that crow he released maybe saved him, though in this digital wireless world, I'm sure he could plausibly find a way to get away like that, too. How will Superman react to the Ulysses plan? I'm curious about Jimmy's family. If this is only going to be a 6-issue arc, we're in part 4. I don't think they're going to resolve Jimmy's family. Unless there's a lot of it in the next two books. Where's Jackie Winters? She must be a new character that's going to be used over the next many months instead of the next two. Maybe this is going to be a 12-issue arc. Don't know. Look forward to that. And what did this issue bring us? Possibly a mysterious guy's name. The conflict between Neil and Superman finally getting somewhere with these guys. And maybe Clark getting canned at the Daily Planet before he gets started. And some final thoughts on this. One thing that struck me weird with this story was that Neil seemed to turn on Earth pretty quickly. Especially after all his hope talk with his dad. But I can see how they've been kind of trying to set this up with him asking things like, what's wrong with Earth? But it's just strange. It seemed like he flipped pretty quickly after being a stand-up and consistent kind of guy. And also, I forgot to take notes here at the end, but let's go back to Ron Troop and Lombard talking at the beginning, where one was saying, we can just wait on Superman to do it all, and Troop, like, you know, can't rely on Superman to solve all our problems for us. And that's Superman's argument, was you can't force him to do things. We can be role models, but we want them really to take charge and do it all. You don't want some all-powerful, you know, being trying to take over and grab all the stuff. Which takes me to my favorite line of the show. Superman says, "You can't force them to. That's not how it works. You can't force them to, you know, destroy the weapons." Like I said, these beings, Superman, have so much power they could physically take a lot of weapons away if they wanted to. Of course, they'd be busy for a really long time, but that's not really going to solve whatever the underlying problem is that the Great World must have solved in the past. So, I appreciated how they placed this in here, them talking about that. When I read it the first time, I didn't catch it. It was only after going back and taking notes, and I was like, what does this have to do with the story? And seeing that was a really good job. Some people might think it was ham-fisted. But, no, I liked it. Ratings, story, I went 4.25. We're going somewhere. It's interesting. Seems like a jump in logic here and there, but that doesn't bother me too much. I really like the story. 4.25 out of 5. I give it the art a 4. It's still solid. It's not blowing me away, except in places it's really good. Some places not so good. The cover, a 3.5, which I really like the cover. But I think 3.5 is a high score. All right, so I'll just take a break, and I've got some news that caught my eye. Interesting thing on Reddit a while back, a week or two ago. So definitely after this promo, come back and listen.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
Superman and Batman,
Golden Age Superman,
the Superman Fan Podcast,
the DC Comics Presents Show,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
It's Superman,
the Schuster Herald Podcast,
the Kara Herald Podcast,
Superman Forever Radio,
Superman Lives,
Up, Up and Away,
Cadmus to Crisis, a Superboy Podcast,
The Armature of Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast.
The World's Best Podcast.
And
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
Russell Bride,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Saab,
Bob Fisher,
Chris Moe,
Mario Benessi,
Drew Wintermeyer,
David Byer,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
Coming in on the RSS feeds.
You are not alone.
All right, I'm back with the news that caught my eye. And Mark Waid, who you may know, a guy that wrote Superman Birthright and a big Superman fan, had an Ask Me Anything on Reddit recently. And a gentleman on there, or lady, asked, "Hi Mark, thanks ahead of time. I'm definitely more of a Marvel guy, but Superman Birthright is one of my favorite stories about the last son of Krypton. So, a few questions. Number one, do you have any more stories for the character? Number two, which Marvel analog do you think works best as a stand-in for Superman? Is there one? And number three, would it really be impossible for Superman to naturally exist in the Marvel Universe?" And Mark Waid responded to all three. He said, "I have a million Superman stories to tell, yes. Maybe someday, but he's not on pins and needles." That hurts me. I would love if he had a story he just couldn't wait to tell. I'm sure that's when the next time he does. He will probably come out and be like, "Yeah, I just couldn't wait to tell the story." The Marvel analog question. On a power level, he says Hyperion. But on a personality / spirit level, Captain America. Love the answer. Of course, Hyperion, without me knowing much about the character, I think he is supposed to be just basically the exact power set as Superman, right? I don't know for sure. I think so. Close enough for sure. And number three, the one about Superman naturally existing in the Marvel Universe. He says, if Superman existed in the Marvel Universe, it would either change him to be darker, or he would change it and become brighter. And Mark Waid says, "I'd put my money on the latter." And I really like that answer. I wouldn't even consider that it would change him to be darker. But I look forward. It would be neat to see him change things around him to be bright like he always does. Which brings me to the new 52, well, I should just say to the question of the show, which is a new 52 question, but what has been your favorite new 52 comic book so far and why? And if you're listening, like some might be, and don't really read much of the new 52 or know what I'm talking about, DC Comics, a few years back, I believe 2011, they restarted their supposedly rebooted their line of comics all back to number one with what was supposed to be pretty fresh stories and starting out at day one on a lot of these guys. Though, confusingly enough, they had a 5-year timeline. Won't really get too much into that, but anyways, yeah, they started with a brand new line of 52 comics. But I'd like to know what has been your favorite new 52 comic book so far of the last 3 years. Definitely write in and let me know. Got some listener mail, tweets, and Facebook posts I'm going to share with you. Here is the first one. Hey Mick, wanted to drop you a line about the latest episode. I personally would give the issue about 3.5 stars. The Ulysses parents intrigue me. In fact, the whole story so far intrigues me. It just feels like nothing is what it seems. By the way, this is from Mark Lax. His parents seem too convenient, and though it would be nice for Clark to have a family to confide in, there just is something that doesn't feel quite right. While the new villain seems interesting, I'm more intrigued by our cloaked friend in green, who is behind that door. Not much with the supporting cast in this issue, and hopefully that will change. All in all, not a bad story so far, and Junior Junior's art is growing on me. Interested to see what he does with the supposed new costume. It does look like in coming issues, Ulysses goes bad. Whether it's from mind control or some other reason remains to be seen. Until next time, your friend Mark Lax. Thank you, Mark. You're a friend indeed. Yeah, I could see that. I didn't get the same feeling you got, that nothing was like it seems, but it might be. And that would be crazy, too, if his parents turned out to be bad. But I don't know if that'll happen. Yeah, we didn't have much of the supporting cast this time either, which is unfortunate. We got a few more tidbits with Lois and Perry and Ron Troop, even. But I'm looking forward to seeing that. And it looks like Ulysses is going to be bad in some way, but hopefully not in like a, as another podcast I listen to, it talks about mustache twirling villains, not in that kind of way, but just in a way that somehow is against something that Superman stands for. I'm not sure. But thanks as always, Mark. Thanks for writing in. And the next one is from my buddy Clem, who hangs out with us over on the Warlife Fancast. He starts out, "Hi, Mick. Thanks for pointing me to your Mick's Comic Cast. I have listened to all your episodes so far, and I like what you do here. I need to admit or confess, I'm not much of a comic guy. I enjoy looking at and reading comics, as well as graphic novels, but they are only kind of a random part of my hobbies, so I'm not deeply involved with them. This is kind of surprising, considering how much I delve into the realms of role-playing games and other nerdy and geeky stuff. Anyway, I would like to share a couple thoughts, and especially would like to raise a question. First, about your shows. I think you do it right. I think you do it the right way, that you give your show a certain structure, just like you did with the We're Live Fancast." And Clem goes on to say some other really nice things. And Clem, I appreciate those very much. And I'm glad that that is what comes across to you. And it's also good to know how I sound to others, because it's the attitude you talked about was the attitude I want to project. I don't want to come across as anything other than just basically just nice and friendly, for sure. So thank you for that, man. That's very nice. And Clem continues, "What I would like to see sooner than later was get a sidekick on your show in order to get a little dialogue about things. This would make your show more interesting, because you could play a little longer with your thoughts and parlay about certain topics on different subjects. Now as for my question, what is it about Superman that makes him your favorite superhero? And what would you reply to someone bragging around that Superman would be the most boring superhero in the multiverse of superheroes?" He says, "Don't get me wrong, this is not what I think, but I hear this more often about Superman than any other superhero. Best wishes and keep up the good work." That's cool, Clem. I'm glad that somebody who's not necessarily a Superman super fan does see and hear that people say that sort of thing, because I definitely hear it a lot from people, that Superman's boring and all that. And I'd like to invite you, Clem, talking to the first part of your email, that to check out the graphic novels we'll be reading in the coming months. Many of them are available at libraries here in the U.S., and I wonder and think they probably would be in Germany as well. But there's a whole list. It's called the DC Essential Graphic Novels. I'll be covering those. 2 or 3 shows will be devoted to each book. And to another thing, you said something about getting a sidekick. And actually, Redbeard is slated to get on this show today, but we could not line it up. I was supposed to record a couple days ago, and we were just trying to meet up. Couldn't quite do it, so he's going to keep his notes from that, and we're going to talk next time. So I'm looking forward to have him on there. And your question about what makes Superman my favorite superhero, and to answer your other question, I'm doing kind of an origin story, kind of an about me, and my story and why I like superhero comics and stuff like that. So I'll have that show coming out in the next 2 or 3 shows. So if you'd like to listen to that, I will answer that question there. It's already in the show notes for that show. But thanks for writing in, Clem. Thanks for Mark. And anyone else who's listening, I see that the listener base appears to be growing very slowly. But if you guys want to send in some mail to mickginger0@gmail.com, mickginger0@gmail.com, I'll read those here. Also, if you want to talk about some of the stuff in these comics, we can talk about those too. So, you can, as always, you can find this at mickred.com, mickred.com. It's the comic cast over there. And until next time, I'll talk to you about Superman 36, The Great World. Thanks for listening to Mick's Super Comics Cast. If you would like to send feedback to the show, you can email me at mickginger0@gmail.com, and I'll read your mail on the show in the feedback section. You can find the show on Facebook, just search for Mick's Comic Cast, or click the link in the show notes. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for allowing the show to use his song, Our Story Begins. This has been a Mick Red Network production. Find this show and many others at mickred.com.